evening, and welcome to What a World. Celebrating diversity and loving it, this is Nevin Campanella bringing you a radio talk show that has no limits and bows to no one. From this microphone, we bring you guests who will lead you across those shadowy plains of forbidden knowledge. And tonight's guest will be Dr. Bruce Goldberg. He will guide us across those slippery slopes. If time allows, we'll take some calls towards the end of the first hour. Our toll-free number is 1-888-268-4313. And our international number is 1-281-419-7697. However, before attempting to climb those slopes, we'll get an update from Charlotte King on earthquake and volcanic activity and review a few past and current events. Hi, Charlotte. What do you have for us tonight?
Hi, Nevin. Well, it's been kind of a busy week. There's been a lot of small events, as expected, in California and around. St. Helens has been shaking more, and they've got an orange alert on that mountain again. They're watching it very closely. They're doing a thermal monitoring to see where the magma may be at this point in time. There's been some ash emissions, various things of that nature, which are not uncommon for St. Helens, but it does show us that the mountain is stirring again. We also had an eruption in Colombia again. There has, on last Sunday, I spoke to you about the event going on in Salem with the gentleman getting his vehicle and running it into the building and all.
Yes,
and then there was the 5.1 quake in Chile shortly thereafter. Well, on Thursday, there was a 6.8 on the Chile-Bolivia border, which is exactly what I would have expected on the fifth day of that event. And that follows exactly with what my basic format is for that type of event. Yesterday, we had a 6.5 in Indonesia. This was located pretty close to the area of the tsunami in Christmas of last year. And that quake was also on time because the third window on my aftershocks are always 1 to 3 weeks before or after the anniversary of the earthquake. So that one was right on time as well. And people were experiencing that one. They were getting the full across the upper shoulder blades, back pain, and the migraine headaches, which was a good precursor on that event. Today we had a quake this afternoon, a 6.0 in Alaska. In Yumanak, Alaska, which is the islands there. I don't know if it was volcanic or not. My thought would be that it is, because I began hearing the sound change last night when I was watching TV, and that sound for that particular area is a single tone, then a dual tone, then back to a single tone. The heart has been kind of active. Mexico's been stirring around. The solar activity, which I had reported, was getting pretty active to me, and they said at that time there was nothing happened. They did have a filament collapse on the 17th of November, which was, again, right in line with the 72-hour lead time that I get for those events. There's been a lot of stomach pain reported. This could be, again, the Sierras, or it could be part of the Wasatch area of Utah, Montana, Wyoming, that area. Also, there has been more activity in the Northern California area, Eureka to the Bay, as well as the geysers around Healdsburg, Cloverdale, the Pinnacles, Gilroy, that area of California. I've been picking up some Oregon activity again. It's a little bit more vertigo picking up here. The cats have been sick, which is a consistent thing for Oregon. They've been doing their thing and reacting, and we had an ant invasion this evening, which is also a very good indication.
Well, that reminds me, Cliff Mickelson did a report on, I think it was on the TNT board, and he was talking about these massive amount of bugs that were all of a sudden showing up. I think it's up around your neck of the woods. I think Cliff lives up in Washington.
Oh, really? Uh-huh. That's very likely, because we did have some quakes in the 5.2 and higher range yesterday in Canada, not too far from BC. So there's been a lot of activity north of me here, and I don't think that's going to be easing off for a little while. It still feels like there's a lot of pressure there, a lot of vertigo, a lot of earaches, things of that nature that go with that area. But other than that, things are pretty much status quo. I don't feel anything major building at this point in time.
Well, fantastic. We'll keep our fingers crossed and hope everyone stays safe.
Oh, I will say real quickly, if I may.
Go ahead.
There was another event in Tacoma this afternoon. A gentleman took 6 hostages, shot, and they were injured. And in that particular event, the person, again, it was a situation that would be just screaming Chile. And
so is Chile, are you saying that Chile is active again?
Well, it had a 6.8 on Thursday, so... there was a suspect that was taken into custody after wounding 6 people in Tacoma, Washington this afternoon in a mall. And so that screams Chile, Bolivia, Argentina again. So I'm watching that area again tonight.
Well, you certainly are able to predict, Charlotte. Is that it for tonight?
That's it for tonight, Nevin. And thanks so much for letting me share my information.
Oh, thanks so much, Charlotte. Okay, folks, I got to get on the road here and start moving along. We've had mega equipment problems, and in fact, I'm broadcasting to you from my cell phone. Hopefully, I'm not going to run out of battery. Now, let's see what happened on this date of November 20th in history. How's this, folks? In 1820, an 80-ton sperm whale attacks the Essex. Can you imagine that? And guess what? You got it. 1851, the novel Moby Dick was partly inspired by this original attack that occurred in 1820. So I guess there is some reality to it. On this date in history, November 20th in 1966, Cabaret opened at the Imperial Theater. And in 1972, Liza Minnelli starred in the movie version. But I got to tell you this. I saw the movie. I absolutely love Liza Minnelli. But Joel Grey, as master of ceremonies, he really stole that show. Okay, current news. Blogging service is changing servers this weekend. So there's likely to be a lot of interruptions. And also, folks, we now have a nightly news broadcast called TNT Radio. It's essentially a news broadcast of news gathered from across the World Wide Web. It'll be aired every weekday night from 6 p.m. Central to 6:45 p.m. Central. So we're going to be on the air for 45 minutes. Why such a strange number? Why not a full hour? Well, our producer, Don Newsom, has so many radio shows going, I didn't want to back him up to the wall, so I'm cutting it off 15 minutes before the hour. But 45 minutes is plenty of time to get the news in. And as most of you are well aware, we do absolutely no advertising yet. And folks, I'm saying yet because this is getting big. So join us there for the news, laughs, and creative net journalism 101 from Nevin Campanella. And for tonight's metaphysical news, we have Dr. Bruce Goldberg shedding some light on such topics as progression hypnotherapy. Dr. Goldberg earned his doctorate in the School of Dentistry in 1974 and eventually developed a practice of hypnotherapy after graduating from the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. Well, we could go on for the entire hour establishing his list of credentials. Believe me, folks, he has that many. Maybe it's time for him to tell us his story. Hi, Bruce. Welcome to What a World Radio.
Well, thanks, Nevin. I appreciate your audience and your offer to allow me to share my experiences with your audience.
Oh, Bruce, we're the lucky ones to have you here, and you're a real trooper because you went through some terrible moments at the beginning of this hour with us, with our equipment going down and our phone going down.
Well, if I could go through 4 years of dental school, I can go through this.
I'm sure you can. You're a trooper. Bruce, I know you're a well-known celebrity in the world of the metaphysical, but some of our listening audience would appreciate a little bit of background on who's the real person and why you switched from your original career in dentistry to hypnotherapy. So could you give us a start on that?
Sure. Well, dentistry was something that I thought I'd spend, a good part of my life doing. However, after practicing dentistry for 2 years full time, I was trained by an organization called the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis to use hypnosis actually in my dental practice, which I did. But I developed a great interest in using hypnosis to take people into past lives. I had read the Bridey Murphy case back in the 50s about a businessman from Colorado who took a friend of his or a neighbor of his into a very documented past life. So I decided to try this, and if it didn't work, I'd say, fine, I'll just use it for dentistry, for pain control and apprehension. If it did work, I figured, well, that would be fine. Let me investigate it. So the very first patient I worked with was a graduate student at Florida State University when I was on my dental residency, and she went into about 10 different past lives, which I found interesting, but more importantly than that, she overcame two habits and a phobia as a result of me working with her, which led me to believe that this was a very therapeutic regimen that I could use more than just for curiosity, but for actual therapy. And that was about 15,000 patients ago and about 35,000 past life regressions and future life progressions ago. After doing past life regressions for about 3 years, I asked the patient to go to the origin of a problem, and I expected her to go into a past life, and she went into the 23rd century.
Did you say 23rd?
23rd century. So that was the birth of progression therapy. Now, this is the division or the, shall we say, the therapy realm that I'm the developer of, because nobody had ever written a book or ever developed the concept of taking people into future lives on any massive level. So I wrote a book on it called Past Lives, Future Lives, which was published in 1982. In 1988, Random House, via the Ballantine Division, republished it, and that became an international bestseller, which it still is today. And your listeners may be familiar with, in 1994, CBS Television did a movie for television. The first time they've ever done anything on reincarnation was called The Search for Grace. It was about a documented case, which was my second book, about a woman who was regressed to a very documented past life in Buffalo, New York in 1927. She was obsessively attracted to a man in her current life who was trying to murder her. On three different occasions, he tried to kill her, fortunately unsuccessful, and she could not break off the relationship. As it turned out, she knew this man in 1927 in Buffalo, and he did kill her. And it became a very documented case that was aired, as I said, not only on CBS, but most of your cable networks, TNT, USA, Lifetime, they've all aired this movie several times over the last 10 years or so. So
well,
now,
strangely enough, Bruce, tonight, just before the show, I was watching a movie on reincarnation. I think it was on the LMN station on satellite. But when we talk about past lives, in terms of what I know from historically, in terms of books, I remember one book way, way back called, Bridey Murphy, I think was the name of it.
It was called The Search for Bridey Murphy. It was published in 1956 by Doubleday.
Yeah. What about that book? Because it seemed to me that, you know, when that book first came out, it seemed like everybody was putting it down. No, it's not so. It was a big joke.
I had mentioned that was the book that I had read that got me interested in the first place. Now, when the Search for Bridey Murphy came out, now, I knew the author who wrote that. Several years later, I met him, Maury Bernstein, who died just a few years ago, back in 1996. Maury Bernstein was a businessman from Colorado. He ran a very high, stressful business, and he really wasn't a professional therapist. He wasn't trained at all. He just decided to experiment with hypnosis, and when he regressed one of his neighbors, a friend of his, if you will, into this life of Bridey Murphy, who lived in Ireland in the late 1700s to early to mid-1800s, this was, of course, it was not a documented case in the sense that they never found the real Bridey Murphy, but the things that she said was confirmed by scholarly research. The problem with the case was it was 1956, and guess who was offended by this? The good old Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Among other people, but they were a biggie. So what happened was that they decided to do a smear campaign, and they decided to, you know, radio and TV, and there was actually a Broadway play on The Search for Bridey Murphy. There was a movie made on it. And, of course, got a lot of attention. Maury Bernstein got a lot of attention with this. But at the same time, people really tried to destroy it. Well, as it turned out, even though they never found the real Bridey Murphy, the facts that were given to him through hypnosis were corroborated. I mean, it stands out as a very documented case, even though they never found the woman who was Bridey Murphy. So to me, that was...
There's only
a couple of explanations. Okay, in science, as a scientist, you know, I have a undergraduate degree in biochemistry and I have a dental degree, and those are hard sciences. And this is, as a scientist, there's only a couple things you can say. You can say, A, it was reincarnation, which I do feel is relevant. B, you can say somehow the woman, her name was Virginia Teague, who was the woman who regressed into Bridie Murphy. Somehow she tapped into the Akasha of the universe and picked up the soul's energy of Bridie Murphy and related it to Maury Bernstein. But if you believe that as an alternative hypothesis, which you're welcome to do, I don't, by the way, I do find reincarnation viable, then that also establishes the belief of souls and life after death, and that's a real biggie to the field, which, of course, does offend people in the more conventional, hierarchically controlled fields, such as religion, that don't like this because it means competition to them, and that means that, you know, you don't need the middleman to get to heaven, you know? It's a real problem when that happens.
Yeah.
So as it turns out, today, the Bridie Murphy case actually stands out from the facts itself as a documented case. Now, when I did the search for Grace, the advantage of the search for Grace was that we got the woman, okay? I mean, I worked with her reincarnate and sent a researcher to New York for 3 weeks to research this case, and he came up. Not only she gave me about 24 facts, not only did she give me the facts that were corroborable, but she gave me a couple of facts, two facts specifically, the age in which she was when she was murdered. She said she was 32 years old, not looking forward to her 33rd birthday. That's what a woman would say. And then she said the name of her son was Cliff. Well, the researcher who contacted me from Buffalo, he said, look, doctor, he says, we got a couple of problems. The network doesn't care about him, but I just want you to know. And I said, well, what's the problem? She goes, well, the newspaper reports show that she's 30 years old, not 32, and that the name of her son was Chester Doze Jr., Chester being the father. And I said, look, Dave, since the network already proved it, you're done with the research, get me the birth certificate of the child and get me the death certificate of Grace Doze. That was the name of the woman in the past life. And he said, okay, no problem, you know. Now, to get those the documents, New York is not like California where I live. I live in Los Angeles. California is an open state. You can find out, you know, Ronald Reagan's pinky size if you want here. But in New York, to get birth and death certificates, you have to go to the governor's office, usually through the Chamber of Commerce, and there's a paper trail. You got to fill out prerequisites, these applications and invoices, if you will. As it turns out, the woman, my patient, Ivy, I call her, not her real name, she was right. The newspaper reports were wrong. She could not possibly have known that information because there was no paper trail in 67 years between the death of Grace Doze and between the time CBS did the research in 1994, give or take. So there's no way she could have known that. So this stands out today. Not only is the document the case because we found the woman, she really existed, but the facts that she gave me differed from the newspaper reporters, all of which made the same error on those two facts. So now it's one of the most documented cases of the last 100 years.
Yeah, unfortunately, errors get passed along, and then they get to be true. And that's what comes out of our mass media most of the time.
Well, but in this case, the truth did surface, not through the media. The reporters, with all due respect, they reported the case actually pretty accurately, but they just made two picky mistakes, all of which copied each other. And, of course, the patient was correct. Therefore, it establishes that this is called suggestive evidence. You can't prove anything in this field. You can't prove reincarnation exists. You can't prove it doesn't exist. All you can do is give suggestive evidence. The Search for Grace case, which I also summarized, by the way, in my latest book, Past Lives, Future Lives Revealed, I go into that case as well as several others, about 24 cases altogether that are reported in there with transcripts and exercises as how people can actually do this themselves. But my point here is that the idea of it being validated now leads to something else. So now if you have past life regression or reincarnation, which, by the way, is a philosophy or theory or religion, whatever you want to call it, that goes back about 300,000 years. Neanderthal man believed in reincarnation because they painted the bones of their dead okra a reddish color, and they put instruments for their future life so they would be protected, and they buried food with their dead, which means they believed in a future life. Now, I don't know any other philosophy known to man. You can name any religion, any philosophy, any political party, any paradigm you want. Nothing that we have on this earth today that I know of goes back 300,000 years except for reincarnation. So it's, you know.
The concept of reincarnation, why some of the religious organizations bought so much at it, especially in Christianity, is beyond me.
It's not beyond me, though. It's not beyond me. It's very simple. Every religion, by the way, references reincarnation. In my book, Past Life, Future Life, the original one, the Ballantine version out, There are references to show you in the Old and New Testament specifically. You can deal with all the other ones, too, where there are several references to reincarnation. The reason why the churches don't want it, whatever religion you deal with, the reason why they're not going to promote it in the West, the East, of course, is no problem. Tibetan Book of the Dead, Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Buddhist, et cetera, they're all into reincarnation. But the reason the church hierarchy does not want to do that is because if you believe in reincarnation, which to me is reality as much as the sun coming up, then guess what? You don't need the priest, you don't need the minister, you don't need the rabbi, you can get to heaven or salvation yourself. And
yeah, don't need the middleman for salvation. Bruce, before we go any further, tell the audience how can they get a hold of your books and tapes? I mean, you've got so much going on.
Well, of course, my website is the easiest way. It's DR, that's D as in David, R as in Robert, BRUCEGOLDBERG.com. If you go to my website, then you can see all my – I have 19 books out now, and they're also audio tapes or CDs. These are all self-hypnosis experiences where people can do this themselves. They can go into past future lives. They can go out-of-body experiences. They can meet time travels from our future. That's another one of my topics that's covered in my recent book, my newest book, A Past Life Future Lives Revealed. They can access spirit guides. They can do all kinds of fun things. Any bookstore can carry, obviously, Amazon.com or any of the other ones will carry any of my books. But if those of your listeners going to the website, everything is on there, including speaking engagements and all my new projects that I get involved with are always listed on the press page, if you will. And, of course, my biography is there and anything else they want to know. There's also about 24 articles, by the way, on the site on the various topics I cover, as well as 5 different scripts of exercises they can actually do themselves. For example, there's a script on accessing the Akashic Records so you can read your past and future lives. There's a psychic protection from negativity, those people that are experiencing bad luck and all kinds of psychic attack issues, if you will. Exercises on teleportation and all kinds of out-of-body experiences. So there's a lot of things on the site.
Have you personally experienced something like moving towards the future?
Oh, yeah, I've gone through the future myself hundreds of times, actually. Here's a case. Let me show you how dynamic this can be. This is a very famous case of mine that's in a couple of my books about a woman. In 1996, a woman came to me. She was a graduate from – she just graduated from college, lives in New York City, and it's the summer. It's June, and she's going to go to Paris last half the summer with her friends, meet her friends out there, and then come back and go to graduate school, right? So this is not an unusual paradigm. So she comes to me in Los Angeles here because she wants to do out-of-body experiences, which, of course, when you do that, automatically you're able to see into the future because you're now in what we call the fifth dimension, where all time is simultaneous, you see? So she's here for about 5 days. I'm working with her. She's a very good student. She's going out of the body, and she's seeing little events that occur in Los Angeles during the 5 days that she's here that come true. In other words, she sees something a day in advance or several hours in advance, and by the time I see her the following day, these events have transpired accurately, so she's got a good track record. Remember, it's 1996. That's important. So now she contacts me. She says, this is really great. I'm going to go home, and I can't wait to do this. And I said, fine. So now she calls me the end of June. It's about 3 weeks later, and she's going to go to Europe the next month now. And she goes, Doctor, I have an emergency. And I said, her name, I call her Tammy, not her real name. And I said, Tammy, I retired from dentistry to get away from emergencies. What's the problem? And she says, well, Doctor, I was using your CD about going out of the body, and I see myself taking off from JFK to go to Paris in July, right? I said, okay. Plane goes up, plane quickly crashes, and I die in this vision. What do I do? And I said, Tammy, I don't want to run your life. I believe in psychic empowerment. But with your track record, I would change my flight if I was you. Give me a call at the end of the summer. So she goes, well, that's a good idea. And she calls me just before Labor Day. And I said, well, what's going on? She goes, oh, I had a great summer, but I got to tell you something. You saved my life. And I said, no, Tammy, I don't save lives. What's going on? She was going to go on TWA Flight 800. July 17th, 1996, 230 people are on the astral plane, meaning they died because of that crash. She would have been 231. So not only are out-of-body experiences not dangerous, but not only do they allow you to see into the future, in Tammy's case, it saved her young life.
Absolutely amazing. Let me ask you a question. This is at a personal level. I'm trying to relate a little bit to the out-of-body experience and what you're talking about. One evening I was reading a book on shamanism, and it gave some direction in there for how to go out of your body, so on and so forth. And I was just laying in bed reading. I was tired of reading. I turned out the light, and as soon as I turned out the light, all of a sudden I find myself in a cave, a very dark cave with a lot of loud noise. It sounded like a foundry. My background, I come out of an Italian heritage. My grandmother was in that cave speaking Italian to me and telling me to get out of that cave. Was that an out-of-body experience?
Well, is your grandmother alive now?
No. As a matter of fact, at the time, she was dead also.
Okay, well, that clinches it. Obviously, this was what you were. See, when you go out of the body, there's lots of dimensions you can go to, but there's two main types. One is called, let's call it the upper astral plane, which is a positive dimension, which people like the ancients would consider heaven. It really isn't, but it's a positive dimension. The other is called the lower astral plane, and that's where you were, and your grandmother was trying to warn you of that and saying, get out of here. This is not going to help your spiritual growth. So she was acting as a spirit guide in a way to you and trying to divert you by saying, you know, wake up, end this little experience, because you're just going to be attacked psychically by a bunch of what we call lower astral entities. They won't harm you physically, but they'll just annoy you. And you know how people wake up and with a nightmare, they feel like a lot of anxiety and maybe sweat on their forehead? That's
right.
A lower astral plane experience. And she was just trying to assist you and guide you away from that so you could go to the more positive dimension in your next experience.
Was there anything significant about the noise? I mean, it sounded like a foundry.
Well, yeah, there is significance. When I give my talks on psychic protection, self-defense, I show a videotape I did where I was on a TV show where a woman was actually on the lower astral plane, and this was televised. This was a live show. It's the only time anyone has ever seen a lower astral plane experience. It's very noisy. It's very discomforting and very disorienting. The noises aren't always the same for people, but it sounds like some people compare it to an airport. It's not. It's a very annoying, noisy experience, and it's very uncomfortable and disorienting. That's why we call it the lower astral plane. You can't think clearly, and you're usually in a lot of fear and terror and high anxiety. So that noise is characteristic. You always hear a lot of loud noises when you're on the lower astral plane.
Oh, well, it fits. Let's jump to, you've got so much work. I want to try to cover everything. You have a notation, a book called Peaceful Transition, and so many people, Bruce, are so concerned about the concept of death itself, and I think that's where you're going with this title. Is there such a thing that you can do in terms of making the transition peaceful?
Well, yeah. What peaceful transition is, actually, it's two phases. Obviously, it was written for people for bereavement issues, people who are losing someone or have lost someone, how they can overcome bereavement. But it's also a book on ascension, because what my whole purpose, my whole theme of my practice and my orientation to my New Age practice, if you will, is to get people to eliminate the fear of death and to allow them to raise the quality of their soul's energy so they won't have to come back. They can learn their karmic lessons. Now, peaceful transition deals with what I call conscious dying techniques. It's a very technical and very difficult thing to explain in 2 minutes, but it deals with the idea of helping spirits on the other side. Let's say, for example, when you describe your experience with this loud noise, this foundry kind of noise that you were in this out-of-body experience, think of someone who's crossed over, a relative of yours, friend of yours, etc., and they go to the lower astral plane, which most people go to because most people die in fear. Just about everybody dies in fear. Society trains you to be scared out of your kazoo about death, right? All right, well, there is no such thing as death anyway. It's just a change of dimensions, but society doesn't tell you that. So what happens is that people die in fear, or cross into spirit in fear, and then they go to the lower astral plane. Then they're going to be bereaving. Your bereavement is actually your being affected by the entity on the other side, the spirit or the departed transity soul. They're lashing out to you because they're in panicking, sort of like somebody drowning. They want a lifesaver thrown. You're now insecure, and you're missing the person, so you feel depressed and bereavement, all the other symptoms. So now what you're doing is sending out desperate energy to them. They're sending out desperate energy to you. You both lose, and that means the bereavement is longer, and that means that person or that entity or that spirit is on the lower astral plane for a lot longer than they want to be. And peaceful transition is a way of showing you how you can eliminate that process and how you can get them into the upper astral plane, eventually to what we call the soul plane, where they can reincarnate. More recently, I had a book that came out last year called Ascension, which is really a better book than Peaceful Transition, because Ascension not only does it carry or cover the topic of conscious dying, but it also covers a lot more techniques about Ascension techniques, where people can learn how not only to go out of the body, but to do it for the purpose of spiritual growth to shorten their karmic cycle.
Well, the entire, you know, concept of death, I mean, at a personal level, no one has ever come back to me and said to me, oh, well, this is what it's like, this is what you're going to experience. And so, you know, it's the fear of the unknown. Are you saying, Bruce, that everyone who dies goes to that lower level first because of fear?
Absolutely. I'm not the only one saying that. All the ancients are saying that. If you read any of the literature, I do a survey of that in the Peaceful Transition book. Why do you think the Christians had the Catholic masses? Those are actually conscious dying techniques. The Eastern religions, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, they have their various prayers. The Jews sit there shiver for 7 days, whatever. All the Irish wake, where people get drunk, but they also try to help the soul on the other side. Okay, all the religions are trying to do that. They just call them different names, but basically, people are. Basically, they're trying to help the soul on the other side. The problem is it doesn't work very well, because if you look around, people reincarnate over and over again. People, the average person has been around here thousands of times, and they're not necessarily happy campers. Society does not condition you to be empowered. And regardless of what society does, I don't find a lot of empowerment with people that I see on this planet. I see a lot of insecurity, a lot of dysfunctional behavior. I'm not trying to make fun of people. It's a clinical observation. People are, why do you think antidepressants are the number one selling prescription drugs? And why do you think the average American is grossly overweight? Those are not good things to see. They're reality checks, because people are unhappy. And what I'm trying to do is empower people, train them to be independent, to take charge of their lives, and to be able to be all they can be without being codependent on drugs, therapists, or religious leaders, or whatever, to be able to do it themselves and to run faster and jump higher, so to speak.
Well, maybe people need to take a look at some smaller items, starting with themselves, rather than looking at these major pictures of why are we in this war or that war, and maybe get down to the self. You have one book called Look Younger, Live Longer.
Right. This is a book dealing with what I call the youthing technique, or if you're from New York, they call it the youting technique. Anyway, Look Younger, Live Longer deals with the idea of increasing naturally through the use of hypnosis exercises, the body's production of a sex hormone called DHEA. Now, your listeners, if they go to health food stores and are into that kind of thing, they will be aware that you can buy DHEA in a health food store. Never buy it. The side effects are a joke. I list them in detail in the book. You can produce it yourself, and if you increase the production of DHEA, which decreases when a male turns 25 or a woman turns around 20, the production of that hormone decreases. And the reason why it's important to keep it high is because DHEA stimulates our immune system, our T lymphocytes, which fights off viral diseases, everything from the common cold to cancer and AIDS. And that's the reason why we age, is our immune system breaks down. What I'm trying to do here is train people, and there's a lot of research to show that the system works, biochemical research by independent practitioners, not me, to show that once you build up the immune system, then you lengthen significantly the aging process. I think the average person should live to be at least 140 years old. Some of my colleagues at UCLA, for example, here in Los Angeles, feel that you can live to be 185, that our body is designed to do that, actually, if you do it right.
Yeah, there's plenty of evidence, biblically speaking, that you know, people live hundreds of years. When you say produce it yourself, are you talking about a biofeedback technique?
No, self-hypnosis. I have also on my website, those that are interested, there's a Slowing Down the Aging Process CD, or you can get it in cassette form too, which has the exercise that's detailed to the script, is in the Look Younger, Live Longer book. They can simply play that CD or cassette. It runs about 20 minutes and every day, and as they play that week after week after week, what's going to happen is they're going to start producing more DHEA, and they're going to start to look younger. Look, if you look on my website or in the backs of my books with my picture on there, my birthday was Friday. I just turned 57 years young. I play tennis every morning for 2 hours. I look great, and if I can do this, anyone can do it.
Oh, and, God bless you. You know, I'm 62, and I look like 90. I spent too much time, with beer and smoking. Maybe that's what did it.
Well, my point is that I always like to use myself as a guinea pig here with because, number one, hypnosis is not only is it harmless, but without it, we would die. Everybody goes to hypnosis for about 7 hours a day. All your daydreams, and including your nighttime dreams, are hypnosis. It's a de-stressing and immune system building up natural level of the mind affecting the body. So it's absolutely critical for life. All I'm doing with this is, without compromising the life preservation of a de-stressing aspect of what hypnosis does, I'm also adding an additional benefit by having people focus in on specific techniques, overcoming habits and phobias, for example, in this case, slowing down the aging process by building up the immune system, by stimulating the body's natural production of DHEA, which is produced by the gonads, and, of course, the adrenal glands. And this is a natural process, no side effects, no taking shots, no taking pills, none of that garbage, no codependency. Learn how to do it yourself, folks. That's the bottom line to this. If you do
that,
you win.
It most certainly is. Learn to do it yourself. Folks, pay close attention. Bruce, you mentioned the dream state as some sort of analogy to hypnosis. Can you tell us, I mean, people dream all kinds of things. Some of them are so outrageous. Speak about the dream state a little bit. What is it that you know about it? What, I mean, when we
it's not just what I know about it. So I'm also going to quote scientific research. We know, for example, all dreams. There is no argument in the field of anyone who does the research or reads the research carefully. All dreams are out-of-body experiences. Not only are they hypnosis, but when you are dreaming, you are actually on the fifth dimension. Let's use the word upper astral plane, or some people go to the lower astral if they're worried about their problems and their lives, etc. Dreams are actually, you are not physically in your body. Your body is resting and sleeping in your bed, yes, but your soul, the subconscious mind, if you want to use that term, that's what therapists would use, that is on the fifth dimension, a different dimension. Now, so we do that. The problem is when people wake up and they try to record their dreams, you know, I wrote a book called Dream Your Problems Away, in which I say, don't keep dream diaries. Your dreams are never going to, I'll tell you why, they're never going to make sense. When you have a dream fragment, if you will, or when a person wakes up and has a scenario of a dream, it's actually 30 to 50 different astral plane experiences. There's no way in the world it's going to make sense. Your conscious mind, your analytical, what we call conscious mind proper that you function in right now, that part of your mind when you wake up is going to try to smush all these factors together and try to make sense out of something, which is why they seem ridiculous. For example, In Los Angeles here in Hollywood, when they do a TV show, let's say a sitcom, they have what they call marketing studies where they invite audiences to a private screening room and they show them a new sitcom and they try to get their feedback to see whether they like the actresses or the plots, etc. So let's say you were going to a screening room, 30 different rooms showing 30 different sitcoms which have nothing to do with each other, and you were to see 1 minute of each of these 30 different sitcoms, 1 minute slice into one 30-minute sitcom. It would drive you crazy. And that's what dreams are, because you're having all these experiences. So instead of trying to interpret them, the best thing to do is use self-hypnosis techniques to access what we call your higher self, the perfect part of your soul, if you will, and to raise consciousness. Don't even bother with the scenarios of the dreams, because they're not going to make any sense to you. What you want to do is raise your consciousness and not have to play the game of trying to create subplots from dreams. Let the dreams alone. Just try to be on the more positive dimensions, and you'll have a much more spiritual experience.
There's a lot of talk lately. One of the authors, I think his name is Moen, talks quite a bit about lucid dreaming and becoming more involved, more actively involved in the out-of-body experience. When a person is attempting to do these things, is there a possibility of being harmed or damaged by, I don't know, for lack of a better term, bad entities?
No, actually, what you're talking about, lucid dream simply means that you're aware of your dreaming at the moment you're dreaming, so you can control the dream. And there are techniques, and I describe those in my Dream Your Problems Away book and my Astral Voyages book, where you can actually use that lucid dreaming to solve problems or to create your own positive, using the dream levels, in other words, as kind of like a computer simulation. Now, on the other hand, you mentioned about these lower astral entities or this, like if you run into a dream entity who's some big monster, a Darth Vader type, can they harm you? No, they can't harm you physically, but you can wake up in anxiety, and you can emotionally be shocked. You're not going to become psychotic or anything like that, but you're not going to have a good experience. Now, you mentioned the shamanic aspect. You were talking about reading books on shamanism. Shamanism is very big on the idea of the big dream, or the dream world, they call that, which is really the fifth dimension, and how you can actually, if you're take charge of your dreams by using lucid dreams. Let's say, for example, you run into a big monster entity, and the entity is trying to scare you and trying to harm you on the astral plane. Well, if you confront that entity, in other words, beat it, so to speak, take charge of it, defeat it, if you will, then you make it your own. Then you have it do your bidding, which is what the shamans would tell you to do. Confront your enemies and make and require it to give you a gift and to be like your slave, so to speak. What you're doing is you're empowering yourself by overcoming fear, and you're taking a potentially negative situation on the astral plane and turning it into a positive one, and that will carry over into the earth plane when you wake up as an empowered experience, and will also eliminate fear. So yes, you can use dream techniques by acting out and by controlling them, but not by interpreting them. That's the difference.
Well, that's a 180-degree turn, Bruce, from what a lot of other people say, but I got to tell you, I wrote a paper on it, and I agree with you for a number of reasons. First of all, Bruce, I have a PhD in psychology and practice for about 25 years, and what I found in the therapeutic environment was that the more that people rehash what happened to them, the worse it got.
Well, let me ask you, from that experience, I've been practicing for 31 years. Have you ever had anybody interpret a dream or have it, let's say the patient interprets the dream versus the therapist, which is much better anyway, not that it makes any difference. Has anybody ever interpreted a dream and all of a sudden overcame a habit or a phobia?
No.
No. So it's a game. I prefer crossword puzzles myself. I mean, it doesn't help them. But you see, the problem is they think they're being helped, so they don't do what really they should be doing, like taking charge of their life. They just learn to be codependent on dreaming about how water means emotions and clouds means that you're airy-fairy or something. I mean, it's a joke. It has absolutely nothing to do with helping them. But the problem is they're led down the primrose path of thinking something's going on, which it isn't, and then they're denying themselves other more productive methods where they can actually take charge of their life.
Yeah, the analogy I had used in the paper was going to Disneyland, meeting Mickey Mouse as a figure there, and then going back home and trying to use that image to solve your problems. I mean, the whole dream state is so far beyond our comprehension that the pictures you come back with, the storylines and everything else, simply don't make sense. So why rehash it?
Well, here's another issue, too. Since you're a professional in the field, there is approximately 75 different dream therapy techniques or methods, if you will. In other words, there's Adlerian, Jungian, Freudian. You go through all of these. There's 75 different meanings for dreams, number one. So that means that no one knows what they're doing. Secondly, in my Dream Your Problems Away book, I did some very careful research. And guess what I found out? Something very, very serious but very nasty. All of our dream interpretations that you deal with, and there are thousands of books written on dreams. If you want to write a popular book, just write a book on dream interpretation. Every codependent person will buy it, right? But here's the problem. Where does all this information come from? Somebody had to come up with all these little interpretations. And you know who it was? I found out who it was. In the second century A.D., there was a Greek philosopher. His name was Artemidorus. And what Artemidorus did was the church was beginning to grow. The Catholic Church, again, the Roman Empire, you know, before they were accepted, but they were starting to gather information from the old ancients about what things meant. Artemidorus collected everything he could get his hands on and burned all the details, which means all of our dream interpretation comes from the editing of one dude by the name of Artemidorus. Well, I got a real problem with that, because that means we have no comparison, we have no corroboration, we have one guy who can say whatever he wants for whatever political reasons, whatever politically correct reasons, whatever power trip he was on. I don't know the psychological profile of Artemidorus, but you know something? I don't really care. I have a problem with one source for all the information that we get. So therefore, by the way, and today there are 75 different schools of thought on dream interpretation or dream therapy. So to
most of it, frankly, Bruce, most of it is just plain BS. I think
but people are trained that way. This is, the most popular therapy training in the United States is cognitive therapy or cognitive behavioral, cognitive analytical. It's cognitive games, which again doesn't really solve anything. It's sort of like, my classic analogy of that is there's a brilliant director, actor, and writer who is absolutely probably got an IQ of 145 or 150, and his name is Woody Allen, and he's been in therapy for 50 years, and he married his daughter, and he won't leave his apartment, okay? I mean, so with all due respect to Woody, he's probably a brilliant guy, but he's got a lot of problems. Okay?
But he makes good movies. I'll give him
he
that.
He does, but you know something? I looked up Paranoia in the DSM-IV-TR, and I found his picture there. You know what I mean? I mean, he's welcome to his experiences.
Let me touch on that topic for a minute. You brought up the DSM. Folks, when I started out in practice years ago, the DSM
was like 46 pages. Today it's like three volumes. Either we've gotten sicker or somebody's making a lot of money on classifications.
But here's the other point. When you classify somebody, you label them. Let me show you how dangerous this is. Nobody ever gets cured because they're labeled. What you do is you give somebody more fear and more intimidation by saying, oh, I'm so disturbed, I've got OCD, ADD, ABC. What you name it on there, and that's an insurance manual for insurance companies. That's what the DSM-IV-TR is. It really does no therapeutic benefit whatsoever to label someone. And today I was just reading an article in the Wall Street Journal, actually it was Friday's article, about how all the antidepressants, the most popular drug in America, they don't work because serotonin is not the reason, the lack of or the decreased version of, is not the reason why people are depressed. So all your antidepressants, by the way, folks, are based on a false paradigm. They're garbage. Flush them down the toilet. They do not work. There's no biochemical reason why they should. And the research today is showing that for the last 35, 40 years or more, we've been giving people drugs, I don't prescribe them, that's for sure, that have absolutely no therapeutic benefit whatsoever. And they're probably dangerous. So, this is where we are today.
Well, they are absolutely dangerous, and there's plenty of evidence to demonstrate that.
Of course, the addiction, the side effects, it's a joke.
You asked before about what I found to be therapeutic. The only area, especially if you get into the area of phobia, the only thing that ever seemed to have some sort of utility was behavior cognitive therapy. I did find some value in that when I oriented the person back into themselves, trying to change that paradigm between their ears, that did do some good. But beyond that, I didn't find much, especially not in the traditional systems.
Yeah, but see, my point is that the problem is that they need some, in order to do that, you need a therapist, and there's a codependency behind that. And I would prefer people in a very short period of time. I don't mind them seeing somebody for a short period of time, but I mean a short period of time. I don't mean 20 years. I don't mean 10 years. I know behavioral therapy is a lot shorter than that. But I'm talking about getting them to a level where very quickly, in a matter of weeks if the most, they can go on with their lives, take charge of their lives, move on, and positively affect people like their family and friends and coworkers, et cetera, around them. That's what we're talking about. That's what the universe is designed for. The universe is not designed for people to sit on the couch 3-5 days a week and take a bunch of pills and then whine and complain about why they didn't get enough strokes growing up. I mean, this is not where – I don't think God designed our universe for that particular purpose. And
you know, you're preaching heresy. I mean, psychologists and psychiatrists are listening and saying, whoa, there goes my money for the month.
Well, I understand the self-interest, but you know something? To me, I'm more concerned about the benefit and about empowerment than I am about the self-interest of organizations or, 80% of therapists are long-term therapists, which is 6 months or longer. And that's a sin to the field. To me, that's an insult to the field.
Absolutely. On that note, we can jump right into karmic capitalism program. Explain that, Bruce. What are you talking about?
Well, we have to wrap this up pretty shortly, though.
Yes, we got 2 or 3 minutes left here.
Karmic capitalism. Actually, I have a brand new book coming out in January called Karmic Capitalism, A Spiritual Approach to Financial Independence. What karmic capitalism means is that it's a way of growing spiritually and attaining abundance at the same time. It's how you can make more money if that's your goal, or attain positions, whatever your goals are in life, while growing spiritually, not by doing robber baron, Donald Trumpy kind of things, but by actually growing spiritually, having a win-win-win situation. And that's called karmic capitalism. For the benefit of your listeners, my website has all the information about that, which is DR, that's D as in David, R as in Robert, and then you spell my name, BRUCEGOLDBERG.com. And if they miss that, they can just type in Dr. Bruce Goldberg in any search engine, and you'll click onto my site, and you can go on to the tapes links, the books links, the articles, the Hypnotherapist Magazine link, if you will, and all the information will be explained in detail.
Bruce, we've got 1 minute left. Use that minute to say whatever you want to the audience about how they can improve their life.
All right. Well, first thing people can do is, listeners out there, is forget what anybody has ever told you if it requires a codependency. Forget about the drugs. Forget about the support groups and all this kind of stuff. Learn to take charge of your life by accessing your higher self. This is called the superconscious mind. The late term, or the more new age term, is the higher self. That's what I train people to access. Once you access your higher self, the perfect part of your soul, that's your best advisor. It's you in your perfect form. There's no codependency. And the more you access the higher self, the more you raise the quality of your own soul's energy, and the more you're going to be a better person, a more empowered person, and everybody wins that game.
Well, Bruce, it's been a fascinating journey with you. You have so much to say, and we have so little time. I really want to thank you for being on the show. It was absolutely fantastic.
My pleasure. I appreciate your invitation, and I wish the best for you, especially the upcoming holiday season for you and your audience.
Thank you so much. Good night to you, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Bye now.
And that ends the first hour of our show. Stay tuned for the next hour, where we will have our very first What a World Radio Astrological Report. We will return in about 10 minutes. Now, folks, I'm on a cell phone, and so we're going to have a little switching problem back and forth, but we will get it done. So come back in about 10 minutes.
Tired of the same old plastic trophy award? For a unique awards or gift, call Eagle Awards in Montgomery, Alabama at 334-271-2277 between the hours of 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Their laser-engraved awards and gifts are unique, creative, and unmatched in workmanship. Talk to Steve for suggestions on getting a laser-engraved photo or browse the store's catalog at www.eagle-award.com. That's www.eagle-award.com. And how about a reward for your body? For millennia, savvy Chinese women maintain beautiful, young-looking skin well into advanced age. How do they do it? Their secret was a blend of exotic herbs now offered by Lamaze products. Try the Lamaze Chinese Herb Body Lotion for smooth, firm, and youthful skin. You can view their product line at www.lamazebeauty.com. That's www.lamazebeauty.com. Or use their toll-free number, 877-604-6521. Their business hours are 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, Pacific Time. Now, on the more serious side of life, did you know that each year, 182,000 women are diagnosed with breast cancer, and 43,300 die? Almost everyone knows someone whose life has been affected by a breast cancer diagnosis. Breast cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths among women ages 40 to 55. Early detection is the key to survival, and mammography is among the best-known methods of early detection. Yet, 13 million women in the United States over 40 have never had a mammogram. With the simple daily click of a pink button at the breast cancer site, that's www.thebreastcancersite.com, visitors help provide mammograms to those in need. Visitors pay nothing, and funding is paid by site sponsors and benefits the nonprofit National Breast Cancer Foundation. While early detection is highly sophisticated for such problems as breast cancer, it is still in the infancy stage for those catastrophic events which affect large populations. Lately, it seems like there is a crisis on this planet of mega proportions on a weekly basis. A few weeks ago, it was Hurricane Katrina in the United States. And now it is the horrendous earthquake in Pakistan, which has devastated the population. So far, there are 40,000 dead and up to 4 million affected. Please spend a moment of your time at www.concern.net. That's www.concern.net. And learn how to get involved with helping those in need. The news leaves one with the impression that maybe our world is a bit screwed up. For myself, I believe that what we see and experience is part of the wondrous experiment of third dimension reality. and is part of a total divine plan of existence. In attempting to convey this idea, I wrote the following vignette regarding our seemingly imperfect planet. It is titled, The Perfectly Imperfect Cup of Tea. And, of course, the actors on the stage, myself and my lovely wife, Jill. Nevin and Jill had just sat down for a cup of tea at the Two Moon Tea House in the Enchanted Forest. He was feeling a bit cavalier and decided to order something different. How about trying something different? Asked Nevin. With a quizzical look on her face, Jill said, Okay, but you know you're not real big on change. That's not entirely true, answered Nevin. I just don't like unexpected changes. Looking over the menu, Nevin spots a tea with an unusual name. Hey, look at this, he exclaims while pointing at the menu. Now what the hell could that mean? I have no idea, answered Jill. That is really weird. Now why would anyone name a tea the perfectly imperfect cup of tea? Who cares? Let's order it, answered Nevin. Not wanting to seem stodgy, Jill agreed. The waiter was quite pleasant and within minutes brought two steaming, perfectly imperfect cups of tea to their table. At first they were a little hesitant, as one might expect, but soon they were sipping tea and deeply engaged in pleasant conversation about their last vacation. Just as Jill was about to ask Nevin where he might like to take their next vacation, she noticed a rather sour look on his face. Something wrong? She asked. Well, yes, now that you mention it, this tea's a bit bitter. Then reaching for a packet of sugar, he said, Maybe this'll help. Jill seemed content with her tea and watched as Nevin began pouring the sugar into his cup. After a few tentative sips, he said, Damn, the tea is still bitter. Something is wrong with this tea. After adding numerous packs of sugar with no change in the bitter taste, he then stood up and waved at the waiter in an attempt to get his attention. Seeing Nevin's distress, the waiter quickly went over to their table and politely asked, Is there a problem? Hell yes, there's a problem, shouted Nevin. There's something wrong with this tea. Looking at his cup, the waiter said, Well, it looks okay. What's wrong with it? It's bitter. And no matter how much sugar I put into it, the damn thing still tastes bitter. In fact, it seems the more sugar I put into it, the worse it gets. Of course it's bitter, said the waiter. That is what you ordered. With an indignant look, Nevin said, It most certainly is not what I ordered. I ordered a perfectly imperfect cup of tea, not bitter tea. But, answered the waiter, that is why it's called perfectly imperfect. It will never suit your taste. Not quite satisfied with the answer, Nevin asked, But I added sugar, and the damn thing is still bitter. Obviously, something is wrong with the tea. Of course it's bitter, replied the waiter. If you wanted a perfect cup of tea, then that is what you should have ordered. Nevin was getting frustrated with the conversation and asked, What the hell difference does it make? If I put sugar into something, it should get sweet. With a sigh of exhaustion, the waiter said, Sir, no matter how much sugar you put into it, it will never quite suit your taste. It is the cup you ordered that keeps it imperfect, and the more you attend to the tea, the greater the imperfection. And you did order the perfectly imperfect cup of tea. If you wanted imperfect tea in a perfect cup, you should have said so. This little view of life over ordering a cup of tea is my explanation of why things are the way they are. It may not satisfy the internal quest for the reason for existence, but it does address a small, essential component of our thinking. Sometimes we get the idea that somehow our world is out of balance. There is nothing out of balance, and everything is, in fact, perfectly imperfect, because that is why we are here in this particular dimension, to be entertained and, if possible, learn from the imperfection. If you want something different, then you must change cups. Attention to the original order will only produce more of the same. As an example, a dimension, or the cup if you will, designed to produce controlling, non-caring world leaders will not change in design because you vote for different leaders or engage in demonstrations against those in power. The cup is designed so that regardless of what you do, you will get what you ordered. And that is an existence of controlling, non-caring world leaders. In other words, you must change your order, or your intent. Now, the really tricky part of this is to recognize that it is your intent that is, in fact, the cup.
Good evening, and welcome back to What a World Radio. In a few moments, we will have Jill Campanella give us an astrological report. But first, I want to describe what will happen with the second hour of What a World Radio, what we can expect. What I am attempting to do is eventually get to first a two-hour broadcast of What a World Radio, and then maybe, just maybe, a three-hour broadcast. But what's being constructed now is an author hour. And by that, what I mean is that I'm going to invite unknown authors on the air, two or three of them, to present their book and what they are about. Folks, this is a way of giving people a chance to get somewhere, to get their work out. And so we're going to have an official author hour, and it'll cover a variety of areas. In all honesty, I have absolutely no idea what it could include, anything from mechanics to record playing to gardening, whatever. But anyway, we will have an author hour eventually, and I've been trying to put it together. And now for our astrological report, which is brought to you by Jill Campanella. And I'll tell you a little secret. I happen to know this individual very well. Hi, Jill. Welcome to What a World Radio.
Well, thank you, Niven. It's wonderful to be here.
Before we begin, tell us a little bit about your history. Who are you, and how did you become involved in astrology?
Well, I've always been interested in astrology, but the math put me off, for one thing, and then I was busy with children, and then I was busy with a career. And so it was just in, probably about 10, 11 years ago that I had an opportunity to go into in-depth study. And I discovered that math wasn't all that hard. And I found it absolutely fascinating, and it's probably the only, project or hobby that I have stuck with. And I think what keeps my interest is that I'll never learn it all. It's just so vast.
Well, you know, when I first became aware of astrology as a science through you, I really had very little knowledge about it. And I came to understand two concepts, one, the natal chart, and then something else you taught me called transitions. And I don't think people really understand what that's all about. I've only recently started to understand the transitions. Give us a little description between those two concepts, the natal chart and the daily transition type of thing.
Okay, first I'd like to say that they're not transitions. They're transiting planets. At the time you were born, the chart is like a map, say a rough draft of of what you came here to do in this lifetime. And that stays fixed. Then as the heavens change and our lives change, and the stars will hit different points in our natal chart. And that's called transits, because the chart stays still and the planets move around us. So our natal chart, we're the center of attention.
Well, when you do a chart, you mentioned math before. Do you have to hand calculate all this stuff every time you do a chart?
I saved up my pennies and bought some great software. But in the beginning, I did. I did figure out the math.
How long would it take a person to do it by hand?
Well, by the time I got through figuring out all the math, I was bored and was ready to go on to something else. That's how long it took me.
And the software, if someone just jump on the net and order software, would it make sense to them? Can they become an astrologer overnight, or do you have to have a background?
No, nothing is done overnight, not in astrology anyway. It takes a long time. You're in a position of always learning something new. You never know it all.
Well, I think I've hassled you enough with questions. How about giving us a report?
Okay, well, first, do you remember a few weeks ago when you had a guest on? I think it was Patrick Cook, and he told us about the Santa Clara decision.
Yes, I remember.
Which gave corporations the same rights as individuals. Well, astrology does that for thousands of years. Astrologers cast charts for countries up to this day for corporations. And with that in mind, I cast charts for the beginning of what a world radio show on September 11th.
Fascinating. Are you saying you have a chart? A birth chart of What a World Radio?
Yes, the birth of What a World Radio. And I also won for the TNT radio show that was opened last week.
Oh, the show we just opened up a couple days ago.
Yes, the one that was opened on Wednesday. Well, I found something interesting when I compared the two. The first thing that I did was look at the ascendant of the two shows. And the ascendant is what sign is rising at the time of birth. So for What a World Radio on September 11th at 9 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time, the ascendant was in the third degree of Pisces. Pisces is representative of the collective unconscious. And the TNT radio, November 16th, 2005, at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. The ascendant was at the 24th degree of Taurus. Taurus being sensory pleasures, things we enjoy. Now, there's something in astrology that I found out about 5 years ago called Sabian symbols. They were developed by Mark Edmund Jones, and they're just little phrases, and some of them make absolutely no sense. But the more you use them, and I've found places where they're used as an oracle, the more entertained I became by them. And they do seem to work. I'd like to tell you those, if you don't mind.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, what was funny about the first Sabian symbol for the What a World ascendant of the personality of the show in the collective, the Sabian symbol is a petrified forest.
A petrified what?
A petrified forest. To me, this suggests tradition, stability, ancient things, ancient knowledge, so to speak. And the TNT radio is pretty self-explanatory. For those of you that have heard this show, the Sabian symbol for the 24th degree Taurus is an Indian, human scalps hanging at his belt, rides proudly. And that really struck me as funny. I don't know if you think it's funny, but I think it's very funny.
Well, it's certainly very descriptive, and probably very descriptive of both those shows. One being the petrified cars, that really kind of defines the structure that goes around Waterworld Radio. It is very disciplined, folks. Nothing is left to chance except the equipment. Everything else is very planned, because on Waterworld Radio, what we're doing is not only presenting you information, but we have to make the guests comfortable. And in order to do that, I have to be very prepared and knowledgeable in terms of the guests. So I spend a lot of time researching their area, in a sense becoming a bit of a mini historian about the person and what it is that they're doing. So yes, it is very much like a petrified forest in that it stands very hard. And in terms of TNT radio, that's freewheeling, wild, hilarious sometimes. Sometimes I get mad, sometimes I laugh, sometimes I cry, and sometimes, like I did on last Friday night, or I think it was Thursday night, yeah, Friday night, I took a lot of scalps.
That was Thursday night.
Yeah, excuse me, it was Thursday night. Folks, just in case you're wondering, Jill Campanella is sitting right next to me.
Okay, well, I found something else further. Both shows, by the way, have a good chance of success. There's a lot of energy behind them. High in the chart, it's called the Midheaven. That's how the public sees the show, how the people that created the show want it to be seen. Well, for Waterworld Radio, that was the 16th degree of Sagittarius. Sagittarius is about philosophy, religion, and higher learning. And the Fabian symbol for that is seagulls watching a ship. It's kind of a peaceful vision and of overseeing. For TNT Radio, that high spot in the chart is in Aquarius. Aquarius being freedom and social reform. And the Fabian symbol is an unexpected thunderstorm. I guess there's enough said about that.
Yeah, there was certainly an unexpected thunderstorm last Friday night when I got really miffed at those 12 Japanese children dying from the medications that were given to them.
And it also is very spontaneous. So for right now in these times, almost all of us will agree that we're definitely in a cycle of change, and those that don't are probably in denial. And I'd like to just tell you that the last time Uranus entered the sign of Pisces was in 1919, and it stayed there until 1927 before it moved on to Aries. And that period saw quite a change in society when you think about it, and that was at the level of the subconscious collective, which is representative of Pisces. For instance, just one spark from the electric planet Uranus created a collective desire for equality of the sexes that continues to this day. So, in a nutshell, the energy of Uranus generates growth through change and upheaval. Operating through the energy of Pisces since 2003, we've seen many Earth changes, as well as movement toward the awakening of the human consciousness. So how are we as individuals affected? If you have a copy of your horoscope, you can look to the house that is ruled by Pisces. Houses are the areas of your life. And to know what those houses are, you'll need a chart cast. If you don't have one, you can get a free one at AstroCom. www.astro.com. They'll cast a free chart for you. You do have to know the birth time in order to know your houses. So, how will these changes affect us as an individual? Look to your chart and find the house that is ruled by Pisces. That's where Uranus will be sitting, waiting to spring. There'll be changes in that house. If it's in your first house, you'll have changes in your identity, your sense of self. and have no doubt that sometime between 2003 and the time when Uranus leaves Pisces for Aries in the spring of 2011, something about you, your environment, your marital status, or your belief system will change. And I've only mentioned four of the 12 areas of your life. Well, now Uranus has been in retrograde. Retrograde motion is when the planet appears to go backwards from our point of view here on the Earth. So since June, Uranus has been retracing its steps and is now moving forward. So expect changes to occur pretty soon, because it's moving and ready to rock, I guess you could say.
Jill, what kind of changes are we talking about?
Well, there's the Earth changes we've already witnessed. You expect more of those. Pisces is a water sign, so you can expect upsets with water, things in the Earth, fluid in the Earth, oil, rain, the ocean, tsunamis, hurricanes, just to mention a few, and that's for the Earth. So if you apply that in a mini concept to your own lives, where will that occur? Look to the house that it's sitting in, and that will give you some insight on how to expect and what you can expect when you're waiting for the unexpected. So how do we prepare ourselves for these changes? There's not a whole lot we can do about earthquakes and tsunamis, but there is things that we can do to get ourselves ready, get our heads ready for this. One thing that you can use is the cycles of the moon. The new moon is a great time for new beginning projects. It's a time of discovery and creativity until the moon is full. You can use the illumination from the full moon to bring your creation into balance. Then as the moon wanes, make adjustments and fine-tune the project. In November, the new moon joined the energy of the sun in the sky of Scorpio. So the project is to discover secrets, things that are hidden. The moon was full in the sign of Taurus, in opposition to the Scorpio Sun. Therefore, it's an opportune time to delve into the dark corners of our mind and shine light on our discoveries while we maintain a tether to the grounding energy of Taurus. And I do find it interesting that Patrick Fitzgerald is using this particular cycle to reveal his discoveries about the hidden agendas in Washington. What do you think of that?
Absolutely excellent, Jill. For the audience, Patrick Fitzgerald is the individual who's been investigating the CIA leak for the past 2 years. And as everyone is aware, this past Friday, a lot more indictments went out. And our friend Scooter, of course, Scooter already got indicted. Go ahead, Jill.
Well, there is some good news. Tomorrow, shortly after 10 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, the sun moves into Sagittarius. It's the sign of truth, wisdom, a straight shooter, philosophy, religion, all the good stuff we're all interested in. So the next project, use the wisdom of Sagittarius and then communicate your newly found truth to those around you. So, happy solar return to all the Sagittarians out there. Recently, someone asked me if astrology really works. I think it was my brother-in-law. And I had to tell him the truth of what I think. It does work. Of course it works. We created it. Everything we humans create works. The science of astrology is as real as any of our zillion other illusions. They all work until we decide that they are no longer useful in our lives.
Thank you so much for that report, Jill. Folks, that's the end of this broadcast. And until next time, again, it was a fascinating journey into the realms of forbidden knowledge. Until next time, this is Nevin Campanella wishing all of you health, happiness, and a safe journey on your chosen path. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.